the punchline was Mayor Bloomberg, and people scratching their heads about that one.
Yeah, I was pretty much there to the end with the Mayor Bloomberg. I was like, this man doesn't know how to talk to people. He is never going to be the mayor of New York City. So wrong.
And now, can anyone get the words Mayor Mark Green out of their mouths without?
Well, there you go.
Yeah,
right?
See,
I was just going to say Mark Green said it was a perfect storm.
Right.
He wouldn't have been elected mayor if it wasn't a perfect storm.
Did we properly introduce ourselves?
We don't have to introduce ourselves because everybody on here knows who we are.
Knows that he's Bob Henley.
And not Ozzie Pabra.
And that's Andrea Bernstein.
And that's Brian Lehr.
So, okay, so now...
all right, so my first question
anyway, Governor Powell, well, here's the thing. Ozzie, here's the thing I want to know, because truthfully... Right. I would love to know more about Carl Palladino's business. We've heard a lot about his emails, but I'd like to know sort of what is the reputation of his business.
Surprisingly, his business is not just sending out emails.
So what is his business?
He is a commercial real estate developer. He has, I don't know how many square feet of space, but the one thing that Democrats are very quick to point out is that a number of his tenants are state agencies. Meaning, when he talks about cutting the size of government, he is in effect talking about cutting the size of one of his biggest tenants.
So that footprint is something that he has been getting money from historically.
Right.
The size of the government. Right.
I mean, that has been, I mean, to be fair, most large real estate developers in the city and state of New York have a lot of government tenants, right? I mean, I can't think of one who has none. I mean, some have
more than others. Is that why they're interested in politics?
Yeah, could it be? I mean, right, everybody's got some. I mean, I don't think that there's any real estate developer in the state of New York, okay, somebody call me and challenge me and tell me one who has no government tenants whatsoever.
And he also, I read, gets a fair amount of government subsidies like Empire Zone, you know, development in depressed areas, kinds of tax breaks.
The profile of Carl Palladino, the businessman, has greatly lagged behind the profile of Carl Palladino, the provocateur.
And Carl Palladino, the businessman, is no Michael Bloomberg, the businessman. I mean, Michael Bloomberg, as a businessman, invented the Bloomberg terminal and a whole new way of getting information about the market. So that's a bit different from being a real estate developer. I think one of the things that is worked for Bloomberg was that people really they understood his narrative of, I was the son of a postman, I was an innovator, I developed my own business, I was successful. I don't think that's quite the Carl Palladino narrative.
Well, Bloomberg reinvented something that, when you look back on it now, we all can't imagine wasn't created before. Carl Palladino, you could argue, is just a very effective landlord. And there's something, as good as you are, it's not something so dramatically groundbreaking that has everyone in other industries looking to you for answers.
But he did manage to get enough money from that to make it so that we're talking about him now.
Right.
Exactly.
And we could just as easily say that Andrew Cuomo has not been a groundbreaking politician, that he went into the family business and has, you know, risen up through very conventional ranks.
Well, very much so. And I think this campaign is going to be so interesting, if we can ever get off the subject of emails, because, I mean, I do think that Carl Palladino has, you know, when he said status Cuomo in his victory speech,
that was,
I mean,
good.
This was a very, you know, that was a good line, because that sort of conveys everything that you want to convey about Andrew Cuomo if you are running against him, which is that, you know, he's been around a long time, not only around a long time, but part of it for a very long time. I mean, he, you know, ran his father's government. I mean, not only did he run his father's government, but he had a role in his father's government, which sort of made him a lot of enemies. And I think that he's still, in some ways, trying to sort of make up for that. I mean,
and
he was the enforcer.
Right. And he had a very political role. That's really what I was going to say. He had a very political role in his father's government. And even really as a very young man, he ran his father's first campaign. When we hear Andrew Cuomo ran the successful campaign to get Mario Cuomo elected governor, that was, what, 1982? So that's 30 years ago, and we think of Andrew Cuomo still as the son.
I mean, and I think before, you know, I mean, the thing I would say about Cuomo is before we, like, get too far carried away with our analogies, I mean, I do think that he is generally admired in the New York electorate for what he's done as attorney general. I mean, he's not someone who has been criticized so much for that. I think less well understood and known is his role at HUD. He was the youngest HUD secretary ever. But, you know, he's not exactly, I mean, you know, last year this time we were all talking about Michael Bloomberg and how, you know, if you're the sort of incumbent, you have to be upset. And, you know, Cuomo is, you know, is an incumbent in that he holds office, but he's not the incumbent governor. So, well, I mean, there's a, you know, there's all kinds of currents and threads here, which I think are sort of complicated to sort out.
Right. Well, it's kind of great for us to sit here and talk about the narratives and the old Cuomo, the new Cuomo, and is this a continuation of the Cuomo? So that narrative can keep us reporters, editorial writers, like, very entertained. Voters out on the street, people that sort of may not be listening to Digesting Politics, which I can't imagine anyone would not be, they are simply
seeing... The majority of humanity
is listening to Digesting Politics.
Yes.
At the Jets game on Sunday, all those earbuds, Digesting Politics.
That's why they're bobbing their heads like that. What people are seeing is a guy who is in office in Albany, who's basically sort of well-liked, but has been around for a while, versus a guy who hates politicians almost as much as everyone else says they do. And what's amazing is that the guy that's in Albany is running against Albany almost as much as the guy who isn't in Albany.
Which means the landscape actually favors Palladino in some ways, because all the smartest people in the room who do politics for a profession are getting loud and clear the level of frustration and anger that's out there. And I think that Carl Palladino speaks to the thousands and thousands of particularly suburban New Yorkers or mortgage-bound New Yorkers who have witnessed the decline in the value of their home, the single most important investment they'll make in their life, while the property taxes they must pay to stay in that home continue to go up. And while the public employees that are working this system appear to pay no price for the economy, appear to have pensions that have disappeared for many private sector people, and meanwhile, they can't sell their home because then they'll take a hit because it's lost value. So they can't afford to stay, and they can't afford to leave.
And here's another paradox that Cuomo's going to have to work out if people pay attention closely enough. He took the Working Families Party endorsement the other day, which is comprised in no small measure of public employee unions. Now, he's been in his rhetoric, I think, just like David Paterson, very tough on the public employee unions and the need to cut the state budget. But I think the equal and opposite parallel is that it's too simple to say that people around the state want the government to cut. People around the state protest when it's their hospital or their schools that are going to get cut. And so are they going to want a governor who's going to come in and slash because the deficit's out of control, public employee unions are out of control, et cetera? Or are they going to support their legislators who've been taking the position all along of, I'm going to work on your behalf to save the resources that government needs to provide to our communities?
Well, there's two classes there. The people that will actually go out to vote, and the people, perhaps the majority of people, who won't bother. So the question is, who has more passion to follow through? So that constituency I just identified, they may not be the majority, but if they are angry enough that they're going to remember where an election day is, that becomes a problem for Andrew Cuomo.
But I would argue, I mean, 140,000 people voted for Carl Palladino,
It was a little more than that. It was like 400,000 votes cast in that primary, but there are 3 million Republicans. So your point is well taken.
But there's also, I mean, there's 8 million voters in the state of New York. And, you know, yesterday I was in Pennsylvania. I'm sort of visiting some of the swing counties that I visited in 2008. And one of the things that was fascinating to me is that I would say that overall people were more depressed than angry, and that, you know, this was not, I mean, primary voters are very stirred by passions, but, you know, general election voters are another beast. So I think that, you know, that will be a factor without a doubt, but I don't know whether there are 5 million or even 2 million angry people angry enough to vote solely about anger. And I do think that when it comes to a general election, people actually do have a process where they start to think through, like, could this person, you know, run the government?
Well, all that has to happen, though, to make those people extra powerful who do turn out is for what is the widely reported in all these polls, the kind of disablement and disillusionment of the Obama Democratic base. That is a real phenomenon. It's not, it's just people feeling like they were hoping for change they could believe in, and they have gotten a status quo that is hard to live with.
Yes, and now they're going to be asked, as Carl Paladino will remind people at every opportunity, to go vote for the status quo-mo. It's like, ouch!
You know, there is a question, though, of defining, and by the way, the General Electric voters, yeah, they're in Schenectady, aren't they?
Fort Edwards. Queensbury.
Yes, forever in
and
Fort
Glens
Edwards.
And Glens Falls.
Anywhere that the Hudson River flows. Isn't there a matter of defining deviancy down here, as Daniel Patrick Moynihan may have once said?
Are we going back to the emails?
Yes. Could it have been acceptable?
Brian, nobody cares in the electorate.
Anywhere in the past? But there's a real issue here of this being acceptable. Okay, of course, people care about government. People care about their property taxes. People care about jobs. But do you then overlook blatant racist behavior? You didn't 4 years ago. You didn't 10 years ago. Do you laugh that off today?
I think...
Who's the you?
Yeah, exactly.
The electorate.
Okay, I think the question gets a different answer if you talk about the primary and you talk about the General Electric election. In the primary, and I'm going to blatantly rip off Steve Kornacki's analysis at Salon.com. He was a former colleague of mine, brilliant guy. And he basically pointed out, that in the primary, in the Republican primary, those voters identified with Paladino. And the criticisms of him, they saw that as criticisms of themselves.
Culturally,
exactly. These were a lot of people that were from Buffalo, economically depressed. Someone is speaking out. And
some of them called into our station. They're not just in Buffalo.
Right. And there was an identification with the candidate that I don't know if that will happen in the general election. I don't know if people that sort of turn up once every 4 years to vote for the president or the governor or whatever the case may be that are not as in tune to politics as we are, I don't know if they're going to have that same identification with Paladino. And when they hear about these emails for the first time, because some people surprisingly have not heard about this yet and don't even know that there is a governor's race yet, I don't know if those people are going to look at those emails and be so dismissive about them.
I don't think the emails are dispositive. I mean, I think that we had an interesting call to the Brian Lehrer show when you were not there, Brian.
When I was you.
Is this the robocall?
So not the robocall. Okay. Oh, that was interesting. And we should talk about the robocall. It was a woman who I said to her, "Well, what about those emails? Don't they offend you?" And they said, "Oh, you know what? They just show that he's not a politician. If he was a politician, he would have been careful and wouldn't have done anything like that. But it just shows that he's a real guy." And I think that, you know, it's very hard to figure out where they go. There will be people who will never vote for Carl Paladino because of those emails, who will be so offended by them that it will be the thing that will end it for them. But that's not everybody. And people take a whole bunch of things into consideration when they go to vote. Usually emails are not the biggest issue. It's sort of like, who's going to make my future better?
And to speak to your point, there was one politician that was overwhelmingly reelected in the primary who actually didn't forward an email using the N-word, but actually dropped the N-word in an interview. That was Carolyn Maloney when she was speaking to City Hall News when she was contemplating a Democratic primary challenge to Kirsten Gillibrand. She was quoting someone that had spoken to her. In that conversation, the congresswoman used the N-word. The newspaper reported it. And because of the stir that caused,
I'm just wondering, though, we have to talk about what's happening in America, like this poverty thing, this report that came out that said the largest number of American households are in poverty since they've been keeping records or since 1970 or some awful number. I mean, people are feeling protracted misery and they don't see any recipe for it. And they've been told that President Obama and the Democrats fixed health care. All that they have when they open their bill, if they're lucky enough to have health care, is double-digit premium increases because the insurance companies wanted to get out ahead of it. So all we have is the promise that things might get better at a time when they're actually getting worse.
And yet these things connect in a way that I think is important because, you know, what is it, 19... 19- 67 again, just after the Civil Rights Act was passed, where if there's a downturn in the economy, people are getting ready to blame the other, the quote-unquote other in America, you know, so the racist emails become okay, and oh, I'm Dr. Laura,
I'm not saying that they become okay, but in terms of sorting out
or
what's
culturally,
valued.
But the culturally identified with Carl Paladino. The Tea Party movement is supposed to be about none of that. The Tea Party movement is supposed to be about deficits, 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 and thereby, in their lights, creating jobs. But at the same time, you have Newt Gingrich out there saying, you know, Obama is showing his Kenyan culture in the way he's running the government. And so there's a subset of people that's starting to identify with that. Are we going into that kind of cultural backlash?
Well, let me just say that when I was in Pennsylvania yesterday, I was shocked by the people who have no idea what is in the health care plan. I mean, I would say zero. I mean, I was in a farmer's market in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, and I probably spoke to maybe 100 people. I would say zero of them had any idea what was in the health care plan. People kept saying to me, I know there's been an economic stimulus and I feel like nobody I know has gotten a job and everybody around me is losing their jobs. Now, to be fair, there were a lot of people who said, I'm not blaming Obama. I think he's trying. I think it's hard for him to get stuff done. You know, I think we need to be more patient. He was left with a big mess. But it was surprising that sort of all of his signature acts, I mean, this one guy said, This man was an Obama voter. And he said, my taxes have been going up. And I said, well, you know, you got a tax cut. And he said, oh, no, I didn't get a tax cut. And I think one of the things that complicates this is that some localities have raised taxes. A lot of fees have gone up. So people are sort of looking at their whole bill and they're not spending any less. And without a doubt, people are getting less services from their local government. So
the clock started running on President Obama when he was candidate Obama. Unlike Roosevelt, he cozied up to Bush and Paulson and was at the table with the real people working out TARP. I mean, that's when people started thinking like, oh, he's part of the process. So they paid a price for the continuity they had through the crisis by having Geithner and Summers, who were part of the old order that became a problem. So people have been looking at their watch on President Obama before he was even elected.
So can anybody in this room sit here and tell us how Carl Paladino proposes to create jobs differently from Andrew Cuomo?
I'm sorry. Did you say create jobs or cut jobs?
Well, you tell me.
Well, he actually has no. I mean, his whole policy.
That's what jobs you're talking about.
He's like a guilty pleasure in the sense that he yells about things, and in point of fact, he talks about reducing spending by 10%. And cutting taxes by 10% or reducing spending by 20% as unilateral acts. And I don't think that Shelley Silver is going to lose his position. So there is a lot of craziness in it. I mean, just as a practical matter, if you were to win, he couldn't affect the kind of change he's talking. You talk with him about it, Ozzie.
Right.
What did he say?
He said, at the point of the interview when he said, I'll cut this, I'll cut that, I said, okay, let's slow down and walk me through how you do that. And he said it's simple. He puts forward a budget. The legislators have however number of days to respond to the budget. And there's rules about what they can put in, what he can take out. But basically, the governor has the leverage to keep the budget as he sees fit, and he gets to line item veto stuff that the legislature puts in. And I said, you know, there's been a history of the legislature teaming up on both sides of the aisle when the executive goes too far. And he said, that's not going to happen with me. He said, number one, I'm not going to have any budget extenders. So if we don't have a deal by the time the budget is done, the legislature is going to risk shutting down the government. And we saw how they responded to that before. So Paladino says he's going to keep firm the budget deadline. And secondly, he said they're not going to have enough of a coalition to override my vetoes because you need a two-thirds majority. I said, well, how are you going to keep your team in place, your one-third plus one or whatever it is? He said, oh, that's easy. If they break away from me, I'll crush them.
Let's not forget that Roger Stone is running this campaign. Have we said Roger Stone yet today? Roger Stone.
Carl Paladino's team is worthy of a story in and of themselves. Michael Caputo, who did not wear a suit for 4 years or shoes for 5 years, was living on a boat in Key West after running campaigns in Russia, is the campaign manager, John Hagerty.
And who called Spitzer a whoremonger in the press yesterday.
That's probably
yesterday.
The nicer thing.
This was yesterday.
Yeah.
I guess he won't be going on CNN with Spitzer.
We'll see. They do need the ratings, you know, so who knows. John Hagerty, who got into trouble with financing with respect to the...
He's still in trouble, right?
Still in trouble with the Independence Party and how he got money from them to help protect the ballots for Michael Bloomberg's campaign. He is one of their major operatives. He was there when I was interviewing Palladino. So,
and Roger Stone, who has a tattoo of Nixon on his back and proudly a credential that he himself touts is that he was one of Nixon's dirty tricksters.
He took a New Yorker writer to a sex club for an interview to discuss how Roger Stone says he learned about Elliot Spitzer and the hookers. He is entertaining.
We should stop soon, but is Rick Lazio going to campaign actively on the conservative party line? Because that might make all the
difference.
Or did
he campaign actively on the Republican party line?
Wow.
He had some ads about the cultural center in Park 51. We spoke to conservative party leader Mike Long, and he's convinced that after a few days of deserved rest, his candidate will be back at it. It's a kind of really ironic thing to have a pro-choice, a moderate Republican who is rebuffed by the Republican Party because he wasn't conservative enough. Now the last hope of the conservatives, because they have to get 50,000 votes from him in order to stay on the ballot and not go the way of the Liberal Party.
I sense a story coming on here. We've got the conservative party candidate, the more moderate, and we've got the moderate Democrat representing the Working Families Party, who are feeling very sore because Cuomo made them endorse his tax cut proposal, which they are not in favor of tax
cuts. And Charles Barron, the Freedom Party.
And there's even a Tea Party candidate running on a Tea Party line by the name of Steve Cohn, a lawyer from Nassau County. So you have the embodiment of the Tea Party on the Republican line. You have the Republican candidate on the conservative line. You have the Democrat on the Working Families Party.
And the taxpayer line.
On the taxpayer line. It's just, and you know, the ballot may just
be. It's like
be,
Italy.
If you thought the primary ballot was confusing, Brian.
I need to talk about Howard Wilson.
Cuomo, Lazio, Palladino. It is like Italy.
Are we done now? I want to go eat my pizza.
I'm eating now.